Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Talked about the need to restore calm, and of course that means also to stop the rocket attacks against Israeli citizens. We have talked about the need to return to the path of negotiations.
גדל ויסגדל שמי רבו בעולמו דברוך ירעוסי וימליך מלכוסי בחיי חוין וביוי מי חוין ובחיי דכל בייס ישראל בא גולור וזמן קורי ואמרו אמן.
It's normal, but because there hasn't been any sort of major attack in Israel in quite some time, this explains why the celebrations are so intense. It's normal that a certain amount of celebration when this sort of thing happens, but this is far more intense than I've seen in quite some time here. And it's not unusual in the Middle East. I've seen the same sort of thing happen in Baghdad and other
parts. Well, who do you blame for the death of the Jewish children today? Do we blame Ben Wiedemann of the CNN Bureau in Egypt, saying it's normal for the Palestinian murderers to celebrate after they slaughter children like sheep? Do we blame Condoleezza Rice? Do we blame Olmert? Or do we blame the Israelis themselves for having abrogated their own responsibilities to their own children? Who do we blame? Well, I'm not in the blame business, but I'm sitting here and watching a slow-motion Holocaust with a little help from their friends. You know, in this world, with friends like Israel has, they don't really need any enemies. All they need are friends like Condoleezza Rice and the State Department, and before long, the Middle East will be judenfrei, and everyone can be peaceful again in the United States of America and, of course, in Europe. Because once the last Jew is either killed or driven out of the Middle East, why, the Arabs and the Muslims and the Islamists who are killing all over the world, whether it be in the Sudan or in the Philippines or in Chechnya or in India, wherever you turn, it's a Muslim killing somebody in the name of their oppressed rights, because they can't get along with their neighbor. And so, of course, as you well know, all of this is caused by the Jews. Had, of course, there been no Israel, there would be no murder in Bombay. Had there been no Israel, there'd be no murder in the 1500s. Had there been no Israel, there would have been no murder in the 8th century, 9th century, 10th century, 11th century, 12th century, 13th century. You name the century and you'll find Muslim fanatics killing their neighbors to either convert them or to get even with some perceived grievance. And so this death today, these deaths today in Israel that we're covering on the Savage Nation, are on the one hand sad, on the other hand a symptom of the decline of the West. And of course, this is nothing to celebrate. If you don't know what I'm talking about, two Palestinian murderers broke into a Jewish school at 8:30 Thursday night, murdered eight religious students. They were all teenagers, by the way. Tell me how many of you have seen coverage which said Jewish children murdered by Palestinians, wounded at least 10. And what was the message sent by these murderous animals? Well, I wouldn't even call them animals because I happen to love animals. What was the message sent when you have a nation like Israel, which goes out of its way, bends over backwards to avoid civilian casualties, and as a result is dying as a nation, and you have the enemy that specifically targets children, specifically targets women, specifically targets schools? What would you say about a situation like that? It's situational ethics? Well, it's not situational ethics. What it is war. That's all it is. It's war. And if Israel has lost its ability to fight the war, that they have found themselves in from the day they were founded in that desert, then I don't have to tell you what the future will bring. The phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. But who do you blame? Do you blame CNN? Do you blame the Western media? Do you blame Olmert? Do you blame Abbas? Do you blame President Bush? Do you blame Condoleezza Rice? Who do you blame? Do you blame the Israelis? Who do you blame? KNEW, San Francisco. Tom, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Michael. Tom. From Mill Valley. And we blame Condoleezza Rice. Condoleezza Rice didn't manage the Lebanon thing very well, and they encouraged Israel maybe to over-respond there, and now they sit on their hands when they should be responding because they have some remorse over them. And Rice poorly managed every step of the way, and she should be gone.
All right, that's one man's opinion. I don't know whether I agree with him. I don't like Condoleezza Rice. I think she's as bad as every Secretary of State that I've seen going back for several administrations. The last good one, I think, was it certainly wasn't Christopher, if you remember him, the corpse who worked for Clinton. The absolute worst, without doubt, was Madeleine Halfbright, a war criminal, a certifiable war criminal in the minds of millions of people in the world who know what she did, not only by legitimizing Kim Jong-il in North Korea for her own gratification, but also for killing 2,433 innocent Serbian men, women, and children by supervising their death, as she should have been supervising the cooking of a brisket. Who do you blame? Houston, Texas. Cliff, welcome you to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Dr. Savage. I absolutely blame the Israeli leadership. They ought to bomb them into the Stone Ages. I mean, if the people can't uprise, the military ought to overthrow the government, take it over, kill all the Palestinians, get rid of them once and for all. What the hell are they waiting for? For their kids to be murdered in their beds and their throats slit? What is
Their kids were just murdered in their bed with their throats slit. The Palestinians, I don't think people understand these were children who were killed. What this is a religious school. These children are unarmed. They're not. They don't even go in the army, Cliff. Do you know that?
Absolutely. I mean,
these are unarmed children. They're like sheep. All they do is pray and worship God. They're incapable of defending themselves, which leads me to the next question. Why? Why was that yeshiva not, why did it not have a secure armed guard with a machine gun in front of the door? Why? Why do they let these poor children get slaughtered like this? So who do you blame here, Cliff?
I blame the Israeli government. What are they trying to be, martyrs? I mean, are they trying to kill their own people to gain world sympathy?
I'll tell you, here's what they say. Here is what the sickness of liberalism has wrought. Israel drops leaflets on the other side trying to minimize civilian casualties, while the Palestinians order children to take up positions as human shields. The Israelis then end up canceling their air attacks, or they occasionally accidentally kill a Palestinian child, and the socialists and the anti-Semites in the world then condemn the Israelis. So what are they supposed to do? They're fighting not only with one hand behind their back, but two hands behind their back. And what they don't understand yet is that they're facing the existential death of their own nation.
They are. They don't care. I mean, the American government is almost acting like, Israel, don't defend yourself. It'll be all right.
I tell you the truth. I traced this all the way back to George Bush and the Saudi Arabian government, by the way. I don't think you understand, but I think most people don't understand how pro-Palestinian George Bush actually is. He is the most anti-Israel of all the presidents that I've seen. And this is unbelievable when you consider that the evangelicals are totally in support of Israel, and they put George Bush in power, yet George Bush sits idly by telling stupid jokes and tap dancing and telling the Israelis to do nothing. I'll tell you the truth, I don't blame Condoleezza Rice at all. Thank you for the call. Who do you blame? Who do you blame? Scott, WOR, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you for taking my call, Dr. Savage. I blame squarely on the shoulders of the Israelis because in 1948 they stole the land from the Palestinians, sir.
All right, let's stop right there again. Stole the land. So there were no Jews ever in the Middle East. We're going to have to go back to square one again.
What I'm saying is that...
I know you're a Jew hater. I know you've called before. I know you hate Jews. I know you blame Jews for all problems on the earth. And if you could have your way, there'd be no Jews in New York either, right, Scott?
That's correct, sir. The Jews.
I see. Wherever... So the Jews took the land from the Indians in Manhattan, but your ancestors didn't.
No, the Jews.
Your wherever... white trash Nazi ancestors, in other words, are entitled to the land that they're sitting on, but the Jews aren't.
Wherever the Jews go in the world,
where, what country of origin are you from, Scott? Germany or Austria? Which one is it?
I'm of German descent, and I'm proud.
All right,
of my...
so you're of German descent. I see, and you come from a fine background of people. You come from a very, very proud people. You've done great in the world, particularly in the last century. You have a lot to be proud of, Scott. I'm not going to let you on the show. I'll let you call another program, perhaps in Bremen, an underground show in Bremen, where or perhaps in Uruguay, you can find a live audience for your commentary. But I'm not going to permit it on this show. Well, the phone number here is 1-800-449-8255. We're talking about the real world. We're not talking about Hillary and Obama. I'll puke before I talk about them today. I'd rather vomit and go off the air than spend one more ounce of my intelligence and breath talking about that. One more second. I cannot do it. You want to talk about them? Call another show. Call a moron who knows nothing else about. Hey, by the way, how did Obama raise $55 million in February? Where'd the money come from? The man's unknown. Who's giving him $55 million? Why am I the only one asking where did the money come from? I know he plumbed the depths of the grassroots, but the grassroots obviously have roots, and then when the roots are pulled out, there's nothing left. Where did Obama's $55 million come from? How much of it is from the Middle East? How much of it is from other countries? I'll be right back.
Savage.
Ale mishkavo vi amod le goralo li keitsa yamin venomare amen.
We've talked about the need to restore calm, and of course that means also to stop the rocket attacks against Israeli citizens. We have talked about the need to return to the path of negotiations.
Has anyone read Job recently, if you really have read the Bible recently, where he says this? Because this is a day that you need to read Job. And I'm going to read you a couple of pieces out of Job, because it's probably one of the most difficult of all of the books of the Bible. Job says to God, "Why died I not from the womb? Why did I not perish at birth? Why did the knees receive me, and wherefore the breast that I should suck? For now should I have lain still and been quiet. I should have slept, then had I been at rest with kings and counselors of the earth, who built up waste places for themselves, or with princes that had gold who filled their houses with silver, or as a hidden untimely birth I had not been, as infants that never saw light. There the wicked cease from troubling, and there the weary are at rest. There the prisoners are at ease together. They hear not the voice of the taskmaster. The small and great are there alike, and the servant is free from his master." Literary scholars have told me that Shakespeare is the closest thing to the Bible. Religious people have told me that Shakespeare is the closest thing to the Bible. I will tell you that you need the patience of Job and the strength of Solomon to do this radio show today, because there are things that need to be said that will not be said on this program, but you're going to hear it through the spaces of my words. You're not going to hear it in my words themselves. You're going to have to listen to the silences to understand what I'm saying to you. You're living in the real world where everything is deception. Everything you see is not what you see. Everything you hear is not what you hear. All of the charade called the primaries are not really the primaries. They're all shadows on the wall of what's actually going on. And so those of you who understand whether, and it's not just this situation, it's many situations, whether it be the so-called war on drugs, despite the fact that we have a bigger drug epidemic now than we've had in the history of the country. And ask yourself, I'm going to go to the drug situation for a minute. How come, although we have a prison system filled with over a million citizens, 70 or 80% of whom are in there for minor drug offenses, not one question has been leveled at Obama or Hillary or McCain about the plague of drugs in the United States of America? How come no one's asked any of them about the problem of drugs amongst the American people and what they would do about it? Or I'll ask you another question. Here we have a campaign with three people who would be king. How come not one person has asked the great Obama, the woman in the pantsuit, or the Tin Man what they think about Palestinians slaughtering Jewish children today like sheep? Why didn't they ask them that, and why didn't they get an answer? They're with them all the time. Can you figure that one out? That's because you're not really watching a campaign. You're watching a Broadway show. So we the people have to talk amongst ourselves, since we know that the leadership is not there. McCain isn't there. Hillary's not there. Obama's not there. None of them are there. They're disconnected from reality. They're puppets. So I'll ask you the people. Allegedly, there's millions of people who listen to the show, 800,000 or so every 15 minutes. Come in and out. The last I checked, it was the third most popular radio show in America, according to all data. So we're going to talk amongst ourselves. Two terrorists, Palestinians, go into a religious school in Jerusalem today, and they open up with machine guns. They fire, they say, 500 to 600 bullets at unarmed children, and they kill, they say now, 8 students, and they injure at least 10 of the teenagers. I'm asking you who is responsible. That's what I'm asking you. Is it CNN? Is it the New York Times? Is it the Los Angeles Times? Is it the U.S. government? Is it the Israeli government? Or is it the fact that the Israeli people have given up the desire to live and they're committing suicide? I mean, who's to blame here? Because that's what I want to talk about right now. Who is to blame? That's right. Who is to blame? I don't want to talk about anything else. You know, it's funny how this happened. I wasn't going to do this today. I was going to talk about how people say goodbye to their pets. It's a funny thing. I was going to do that today. We were going to get all sorts of things on that. And then I saw this story and I said, I can't insult the death of these kids by talking about the death of pets. You know, as much as I love dogs, people come first. So we'll talk about the death of the Jews again.
Savage.
I call them evil because if you murder the innocent to achieve a political objective, you're evil. These folks have beliefs. They despise freedom. They despise the right for people to worship an almighty the way he or she sees fit. They desire to subject millions to their brutal rule. Our enemies oppose every principle of humanity and decency that we hold dear. They kill innocent men and women all the time.
The only all right, way let's pause. This is a great speech that has gone unnoticed by President Bush, speaking at the 5th anniversary of the Homeland Security Department, and it's chillingly appropriate for the slaughter today in Jerusalem, where Muslim fanatics broke into a Jewish school and slaughtered children who are unarmed, and the world will not tell you they were children who were unarmed in a school. Because if they said that Muslim fanatics killed unarmed Jewish children, you're liable to get the picture. And you can't permit that to happen. Not when you're trying to elect somebody who's on the side of the Palestinian terrorists, as is the media. Right now we have a guest with us, Ariel Cohen from the Heritage Foundation. Ariel, welcome to the Savage Nation. So what do you make of all of this?
I think the Palestinians are sending a message to Condi Rice, who just left the Middle East, and to everybody else. They don't want peace. The bodies of these Jewish religious students, people who are seeking God's word and God's guidance in their lives, these bodies are lying there as a witness to what these murderers, what these terrorists want, not just for the Israelis, not just for the Jews, but for Americans, and they say it again and again, our enemy is the small Satan, Israel, and the great Satan, the United States. They want to convert the Western Europe into Sharia law, and they want to spread jihad and Sharia all over the world. And this is the episode, just one among many, in this ongoing...
But, you know, Ariel, we know that they're vermin. We know that they're subhuman. We know that. They're not part of the human condition, these people, this type of person. But Israel erected erected a fence that has been working. How did they get into a yeshiva in Jerusalem, number one? And number two, do you know why the yeshiva was not guarded by a man with a submachine gun?
It probably was. Operationally, I was talking on the phone to my wife and commenting that in terms of gathering operational intelligence, this was a professional operation, because they hit when these kids were in a dining room during a dinner. So they knew exactly where the dining room was, what time is the dinner, and they hit them when they could get the largest number of victims. They killed 8. They severely wounded 10. And day after day, Palestinian terrorists from Gaza, Hamas, supported by Iran and by some funding from Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, and all other countries where your gasoline dollars are at work, Hamas is shooting rockets. Palestinian Islamic Jihad is shooting rockets on Israeli schools, towns, villages, and now on the city of Ashkelon.
But Ariel, we know this, but the Israelis are paralyzed with fear. They don't seem to be able to defend themselves anymore. Let's go back in time. You're an Israeli, I assume?
I lived in Israel for 11 years.
All right, you're not an Israeli. You're a scholar who studies the Middle East and other places. You know, and I know, having studied recent history, that in previous administrations, before a pre-Olmert PO, Israel pre-Olmert, never would have permitted this to happen without a retaliation immediately. What is happening in Israel? Why are they committing suicide?
What's happening in Israel is the spread of the same leftist liberal ideology that we have in this country and that we have in Western Europe. Israelis, secular Israelis in particular, who go through colleges and universities, who are taught by professors who went to school in America, are being taught that they don't have the right for their own state, that Zionism is wrong, that violence is always wrong, and that you don't have the right for self-defense. This is the same problem we may be facing in this country if we don't wake up. We have a global conflict with radical Islam that is tenacious. Radical Islamic forces were attacking Europe for hundreds of years. They are the ones that provoked the Crusades in the Middle Ages. And now these forces, boosted by a multi-billion dollar oil revenue, these forces are back. And Israel is just one little front in the global war that includes Afghanistan, that includes Iran, that includes al-Qaeda. And Hamas has allowed al-Qaeda and Iranians to penetrate Gaza. Iran supplied these rockets that are being shot now at the Israeli...
I understand, Ariel. I know all of this. I personally have studied it very, very completely, and I believe every word you're saying, so it leads me to the next question. If Hitler had been killed in 1939, 50 million people wouldn't have been killed between 1940 and 45. Why is the Iranian Hitler permitted to do this? The Israelis have the wherewithal to take care of business. Why are they afraid to do so?
If you're talking about taking out the whole Iranian nuclear complex, the nuclear industry...
No, Mahmoud, the Hitler of Iran just went to Iraq and crowed about the fact that he wants to now basically unite Iraq and Iran. He was there. He is a sitting target. His airplane was flying with his mullahs. Why don't the Israelis do something about it instead of complaining to the world is what millions of people are asking.
Michael, it's not the Israelis who control Iraq. Who's controlling Iraq? George W. Bush. So we could have arrested Ahmadinejad and put him on trial if somebody wanted to do so. Or a horrible accident could have happened to him there. But none of that happened. And back to the Israelis. The State Department and the Bush administration increasingly information agency. Used to be a pretty decent information agency, but now it's just jihadi propaganda. They have
You know how many times I've said Reuters, the grandchildren of the SS? If I said it 50 times, I've said it once. Reuters may as well be the propaganda arm, the Leni Riefenstahl of Hamas.
Absolutely. There's a guy named Nidal al-Mughrabi who called Hamas the soldiers of God, and Reuters published it. It's unbelievable. But the problem is we have in this country professors in Columbia University, in University of Michigan, who create the whole curricula for our students that we send to these colleges with our hard-earned dollars.
But Ariel, I know we all know that the left wing is anti-West. It's suicidal in a sense. It's like an autoimmune disease that turns against its own self. We understand that leftists are mentally ill. We understand all of this, but the Israelis have been facing this from the day they were created in 1948. What has happened, of course, is obvious to you and I and anyone else who studied it, but surely there's another element within Israel that sees this as well. There are still young men who fly airplanes. There are men who are in special forces who are not afraid to die for their country. Why are they not being given the orders to go out and take care of business?
Because you have Mr. Olmert, and Mr. Olmert is looking behind his shoulder and sees Condi Rice, and he's doing exactly what Condi tells him. For example...
Wait. So Olmert, he has a popularity rating of less than 10% by every study I've seen. How come there's been no referendum to throw him out of office?
Absolutely. But where's Bibi Netanyahu? Where's the leader of the right?
Oh, I don't believe in Netanyahu. I think he's a fraud. I think he's a sham, personally. He had his chance and he blew it. He was exactly the same. He talks tough and he acts the same way Olmert does when he had the power. He's not the hope either, but isn't there another element within Israel capable of defending itself?
Well, people would like now to take resolute measures against Hezbollah. They were willing to fight Hezbollah in 2006, and instead of implementing a military program that they had and they prepared for, they threw it out and they did the monkey around for 34 days and they didn't accomplish anything. So
well, look
now,
what just happened in Gaza. Mr. Cohen, look what just happened in Gaza. Abruptly, Olmert withdrew the ground troops in the middle of a progressive battle. He withdrew them because Condoleezza Rice told him to do so, according to what I read. Is that an accurate analysis in your opinion?
Yes, and Olmert is the worst prime minister from the point of view of military command Israel ever had. And unfortunately, he has now Mr. Barak, who was a prime minister when Yasser Arafat unleashed his terror war in 2000. Remember when Arafat walked away from Clinton and Barak in Camp David? He was given a Palestinian state on a silver plate. He said no. Why? Because he wanted the whole Israel. They want Israel destroyed. And let me tell you something. If they ever, God forbid, succeed in that, Europe will be next, and the United States will be there shortly thereafter, because it will give such a boost with the jihadis. It will be just the grand prize for them. If, God forbid, they manage to destroy Israel. I don't think it's going to happen. I think Israelis have more brains than that. But it's also our duty as Americans and the duty of the Europeans to understand that people who live in glass houses cannot throw stones. We may need, and we are, fighting the war on terror in Iraq and Afghanistan and Somalia and Sudan and elsewhere. We may need to go and take retaliatory measures against the terrorists, just like Israelis do, so we cannot stand there and scream, stop it, stop it, stop it.
But Ariel, I agree with you, but I think the battle's being fought so wrong, and I'm no war hero myself, but I've studied enough history to know that in order to defeat an enemy, you've got to defeat the leadership. And if all of this is coming from the head of the snake, and the snake is Ahmadinejad, the Hitler of our time, who wants to wipe Israel off the map, and who has said, and I remember the speech, he said, it's worth killing all the Jews in Israel to lose half the Iranian people to me. He said that. He's on record for that. And yet he walks around, he flies around, he gives speeches, and the Israelis let him do it. So, yeah, you can fight all of the battles, I think, that you want in Lebanon or in Gaza. And yet if you let the leadership continue to fund and to influence and to inspire the murderers, you're going to be fighting until there's no one left to fight. I think that the battle's being fought all wrong, Ariel.
Why are you pointing fingers at Israel when Iran just launched a satellite into space? And we know that countries that launch satellites into space are preparing for intercontinental ballistic missile production.
Wait a minute. That's just exactly what I just said. Why is he permitted to do this? Why is he not stopped by Israel or by the United States is my question.
Well, in terms of the Israelis, we agreed that Israel has a feeble leadership in the persons of Mr. Olmert and Foreign Minister Tzipi Livni and Defense Minister Ehud Barak. But the question is also where is the Bush administration?
And how did Barak go from being a war hero, going all the way back to when he dressed as a woman and conducted a commando raid with a machine gun underneath his dress, which he did? He was a great general, a very heroic general. How did he become such a patsy?
No, what you describe is Barak as a lieutenant or a captain. A guy who goes with a machine gun in an apartment full of terrorists is not a general. Barak was perfect as a commander of a platoon. He was okay as a commander of a battalion, and he failed utterly in large-scale command. Just like as my once hero, Ariel Sharon, who was a terrific division commander in 67 and 73, failed as a leader of Israel because he withdrew from Gaza knowing full well, or he should have known, that a withdrawal from Gaza will bring upon Israel the deadly rain of Katyusha rockets and Qassam rockets, and he did it. And
well, guess what? I wasn't a captain or a general, but when it was happening, I said they're going to get a barrage of rockets in return. And all I heard from listeners was, oh, no, you're wrong, Savage. Once they withdraw from Gaza, there's going to be peace. The Palestinians are going to grow orchids and send them to Europe. You know what happened, and I know what happened. But look, we both see the truth here, Ariel. So now how could anyone ask the Israelis to withdraw from the so-called West Bank when they've already seen what happens by withdrawing from this tiny little piece of the Gaza Strip? How in the world could the U.S. encourage this?
Because there are people in the United States, and I live in Washington, and I work in the foreign policy arena, and I meet these people all the time, and these people, either sincerely or because they're getting some very nice retainers from certain Middle Eastern tyrannies and kingdoms, are saying day in and day out, Israel is the problem, whereas the problem is jihadi terrorism and jihad against the West. And these people in Washington, to whom, unfortunately, some of our senior leaders listen to, these people have a lot of influence. And
all right. Ariel Cohn, before you go, is there going to be a military reaction to this slaughter in Jerusalem?
First of all, they should figure out who did it. And then, of course, they should, in my view, go and take out the commanders, take out whoever ordered it, whoever financed it. They should be a really adequate, really nasty military reaction, because after all, it's the Middle East. You know the joke about the Middle East?
No.
When the scorpio is asking the frog, take me over the river. And the frog,
oh, yes, yes, yes. Why did you sting me? And he says, because I could. Well, unfortunately, you don't have Golda Meir as prime minister anymore. I doubt that we're going to see a vociferous retaliation. It's going to be another meek Olmert, a Polish-like reaction. Ariel Cohn, it's a very sad day to see Jewish children being slaughtered with a slow-motion Holocaust and the world yawning. Thank you for being with us on the Savage Nation, and I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Michael.
It is 50 minutes after the hour. We're talking about the slaughter of Jewish children in Jerusalem just hours ago. Innocent children, unarmed, not members of the military, and the world, of course, not interested, only in other topics. I'll be back. Here we are in the middle of supposedly one of the most important elections in American history. Here we have the slaughter of innocent children in the Middle East by Palestinian murderers. And no one asks Barack Obama what he thinks of it and which side he's on and what he would do. No one asks John McCain. No one asks Hillary Clinton. All we hear about is how much money they raised. This, to me, is a product of the American people. We get exactly what we deserve. That's why they're able to get away with it. And there's nothing more I can say. I can't believe that they're allowed to get away with this without talking about substance. Here's an event. It's shocking. Ask them what they think about it. What would they do today? What would they advise the people in the Middle East to do or not to do? Ask the great Obama, the invisible man from Chicago, the invented man from Chicago. Ask the woman in the pantsuit. Ask the tin man. But who do you blame is the question. Who do you blame? Who caused these deaths today? Quickly, Lee in Los Angeles, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yeah, I want to blame Western civilization, basically, for, you know, caging truth, justice, fairness, and replacing it with political correctness, cultural relativism, and, of course, Prozac. You know, it's tragic. It's tragic. Nobody cares about anything. And they let the lies go unquestioned and, you know, unchecked. And that's why no one asks McCain or Clinton or
But how could these people in the news business keep doing this without somebody shaking them and saying, for God's sakes, Muslim fanatics slaughter Jewish children today in Jerusalem. What do you think about it, Mr. Barack Obama? What do you think about it, Hillary Clinton? What do you think about it, John McCain? How could they not ask them this question?
The animals on Animal Farm, they didn't ask, you know, why the rules kept changing on them, what was going on. I mean, it's the animal farmization of our culture, and no one asks, and no one, and they try to tell
us. Don't say no one does. I ask, and I'm still in the media. The show hasn't disappeared, even though the Arab-Muslim fanatic front groups want to make me disappear by pretending to be peace and love and practicing the religion of peace and concerned about civil rights. No, I'm still here. And by the way, tomorrow my lawyer goes to court to find out whether we're going to have our day in court or whether the judge has been bought out already. We have no idea. We'll find out tomorrow. You can go to michaelsavage.com and check it all out today and tomorrow.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
גדל ויסקדה שמי רבו, בעולמו דברו חירוסי וימליך מלכוסי, בחיי חוין וביוי מיכוין ובחיי דכל בייס ישראל, בא גולו וזמן קורי ואמרו אמן.
על משכבו ויעמוד לגורלו לקץ הימין, ונאמר Amen.
We're in a battle with evil men. I call them evil because if you murder the innocent to achieve a political objective, you're evil.
Let's pause here. Now, what's amazing here is that President Bush gave this great speech at the anniversary of the Homeland Security Department's founding. It had nothing to do with what happened today, the slaughter of the innocents in the Middle East. We're talking about 8 Israelis killed, dozens injured now, in a shooting at a school, a religious school, in West Jerusalem. A Palestinian gunman armed with a Kalashnikov machine gun and a bomb vest broke into the yeshiva Thursday night, which is right now, and opened automatic fire at the unarmed children. Unarmed children. Now, I want to pause right here and ask a question. I want to go back in history with you in the audience. It's a very emotional time when a thing like this happens. But this is not the first time that innocent people have been attacked, nor will it be the last time that innocent Jews are attacked by their enemies. The question that keeps coming back to my mind is, why are these children unarmed? In addition to studying God's word, why are they not trained to carry weapons and to use weapons? It's puzzled me for many, many decades. I look at the history, for example, of China. I look at the history of the development of martial arts. I don't know if many of you know it, but many of the martial arts were developed inside Buddhist monasteries where seminarians were molested, or in that sense, molested. I don't mean sexually. They were attacked by pirates, robbers, bandits, thieves, who broke into the temples and hurt the children, hurt the priests, and stole whatever the people had until eventually they learned how to defend themselves by developing schools of martial arts, whether it be using hose, you know, or a chair, how to pick up a chair and kill an aggressor with a chair. In other words, the martial arts in the Chinese seminaries were developed to protect the seminarians. I'll never understand why the Jews have not learned how to defend themselves within their own seminaries, in other words. Sure, they know how to fly an F-21. God bless, they know how to shoot a gun. Many of them do. But why are the religious students, who, by the way, don't serve in the military, they don't serve in the military, they want somebody else to defend them? Maybe this is the last day that this shall be. Maybe after this, Israel could pass new laws which says, if you live in Israel, you serve in the military. If you live in Israel, you carry a gun. If you live in Israel, you learn how to defend yourself. I don't care how religious you are. Maybe, 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 baby. I have more questions than there are answers. And I've asked in the last hour, who do you blame for this? Is it Condoleezza Rice, George Bush? Is it CNN? Is it ABC, CBS, NBC? Is it the New York Times? Is it the LA Times? But why haven't they asked the great Barack Obama, who would be the leader of the free world, what he thinks today about the slaughter of the innocent Jews in the yeshiva? Why don't they ask the woman in the pantsuit what she thinks? Why don't they ask the Tin Man what he thinks? The American media, by the way, is who killed these children today. It's the American media. It's men like Wolf Blitzer who killed them, if you want my opinion. That's who killed them. We're going to go live to Jerusalem right now, where we have a man on the scene who is right there, right now, Aaron Klein, live from Jerusalem. Aaron, what's the situation over there?
I'll tell you, it's still bloody. I know that the soldiers and a lot of the students who are inside, they've been evacuated. Israel's not yet sure whether there was a second terrorist that infiltrated this yeshiva. And so police are literally searching house to house in the vicinity of the yeshiva. But actually, the first terrorist who got into this seminary, who got into this yeshiva, he was shot by one of the students. Actually, some of the students there were armed, thankfully, and one of the students in the yeshiva shot this terrorist dead after about 3 or 4 minutes.
Hold it. Let's clarify that. I read that there was a student with a rifle on a roof across the street. Is that what you're talking about when you say the student was armed?
Yeah, indeed. This was a student of the yeshiva, but he didn't go in. And as soon as he started hearing the firing, apparently he went to the building across the street, went up to the roof, and then waited for the terrorist to come out of the yeshiva where he entered. And then this student shot the terrorist dead.
Yeah, and that was after he already killed the kids. Now, these kids, these are not armed by and large, right?
Well, I'll tell you, a lot of the schools in Israel are armed, but what you have is a situation where a lot of American Jews, they finished their high school, and then they want to come to Israel for a year and study at a yeshiva and then get college credit, and then they go back to the United States. And this was one of those yeshivas that had a lot of foreigners who couldn't get their gun licenses, and anyway, they're Americans, so obviously they're not going to be armed. But the difference between a shooting attack in Jerusalem and a shooting attack on a college campus in the United States is about an hour and a half. That's the difference. In Israel, if a terrorist opens fire in a civilian area, it's considered a suicide mission because Israelis, actually, they're very armed, and any terrorist will be killed within about 5 or 6 minutes, as was the situation today. Whereas you have a lot of instances just a few months ago where a crazy whack job student opened fire on a college campus in America, and then he can sit there and go from classroom to classroom and 45 minutes later go down the hall to another classroom, and he's not killed.
Well, what's the mood in Israel right now?
The mood is one of depression, I think, in a lot of the Israeli society, because there have been so many attacks the past year, the past 2 years, just the past few days.
Right, so the enemy is winning, in other words. The enemy is wearing them down and winning. They're destroying the morale of the Jew.
It's urging Israel to continue their dialogue and negotiations with the Palestinian Authority. So I think even after this Jewish blood running through the streets of Jerusalem, even after rampant rocket attacks in the Jewish communities outside...
Wait, Aaron, I'm reading a report now from the Associated Pukes. Listen to this. A gunman, again, not a Palestinian gunman, a gunman entered the library of a rabbinical seminary and opened fire in a crowded nighttime study session, killing eight people. How come he didn't say eight children or eight students? Why is it eight people?
Indeed, and I guarantee you that the AP tomorrow is going to have some human interest story painting this gunman as poor and desperate and occupied, and he was just acting out because of Israeli so-called occupation, even though, you know, that I've talked with many terrorists in the past, and they tell me outright that they claim, at least, that suicide is not allowed, according to Islam, that they're fighting because they want to reach the highest levels of Allah's paradise. They're blowing themselves up and carrying out these shooting attacks because they believe that it'll bring them to heaven where they can spend an eternity with 72 dark-eyed virgins. But tomorrow the AP will probably do that human interest story, painting this poor gunman as a victim.
Well, we know what the American and European media is all about, so we shouldn't waste our time on that. But you are in Jerusalem right now, Aaron?
Indeed.
Where are you in Jerusalem?
I'm on Emek Rephaim, which is in the German colony. It's about a 10-minute drive from the site of the attack. And I watched the footage, and I drove by, and I saw at least some body parts being taken out.
But, Aaron, in the past when there were terrorist attacks in Israel, the people went out in the streets. There was tremendous passion and anger and demands for retaliation. Do you not see that anymore?
No, I think the Israeli people are tired. And actually, even when they do demand, we've had hundreds of thousands of Israelis protesting against this absolutely disastrous Prime Minister, Ehud Olmert, and the man is still in power. He lost a war against the Hezbollah terror group, and he's still in power. So I think Israelis here...
How could that be? Don't you have a parliamentary system where there could be a call for a new election, unlike America, where we're stuck with the loser for four, eight years? Why isn't there a call for a new government?
A situation like that, they're supposed to have a situation where the Knesset can call for new elections, but the Knesset is so corrupt, and the opposition here is...
Okay, we can stop right there. So we see a nation committing suicide, and we see a people who have been so broken by their own government's inaction that they're literally waiting to be killed.
And you know,
have I gone too far in what I just said?
No, I don't think you're going far enough, because this is the situation, and it's getting extremely serious. We're talking about Israel surrounded on all sides, on the north, on the south, on all sides by enemies that seek its destruction. And all the Israeli government is doing, and unfortunately the United States as well, is continuing to embolden those enemies. And whenever Condoleezza Rice comes here and urges Israel to give up more territory, what the United States needs to realize is that, forget about Israel for a minute, this is taking the white flag and waving it in the face of jihad. It's a surrender. That's the way our enemies see it in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's the way our enemies see it in New York as well.
We're speaking with Aaron Klein live from Jerusalem about the latest insult against civilization by the Islamists. And if you'd like to ask Aaron a question, I'm going to open up three lines at 1-800-449-8255. Aaron, you wrote a recent book called Schmoozing with Terrorists, which is very popular right now, where you actually speak to some of these murderers. We'll be right back to talk with Aaron right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
War, it's war, it's war, it's war in the Middle East and everywhere else. Jihad against the West, it's been going on since the 7th century. And now, of course, it's come home to roost in a Jewish religious school, unarmed students. And here we see the report, quote, the whole building looked like a slaughterhouse. The floor was covered in blood. The students were in class at the time of the attack. The floors are littered with holy books covered in blood. Now, let's pause right on that line. The floors are littered with holy books covered in blood. Here in America, if a Quran so much as gets a drop of water on it, the FBI, the police, Homeland Security seek out the person who may have accidentally splatted a drop of water on a holy book, and the person is accused of a hate crime. But apparently in Israel, holy books can be covered in Jewish blood and nothing happens. That's the world you live in. That's the world you live in. Now I ask you, who's on top and who's winning and who's controlling things? I'll let you figure it out. We're speaking with Aaron Klein live from Jerusalem. We're taking calls. Let's go to New York. Hannah in New York on WOR Line 8. Go ahead, Hannah.
I'd like to know, why do they allow Arabs to serve in the Israeli Knesset when they're a fifth column and they discuss and they talk about destroying Israel just like any other Palestinian would?
Well, I can answer the question the same reason we permit Democrats to be in Congress.
I don't think anybody would go into Congress and say, I want, you know, America wiped off the map.
Well, I don't know. Obama said he would talk to our worst enemies. He didn't ask for any concessions. He'd give them everything. Why is he a viable candidate? I can answer the question without Aaron answering the question. You don't have to go any further than the Democrat Party, particularly the left wing of the Democrat Party, which is the whole wing.
Also, you walk around Jerusalem and you see Arabs all over the place and nobody bothers them. But if a Jew were to step foot in Ramallah or something, they're like...
All right, so they're a beaten people. It's only a matter of time. I don't even want to... I can't... Anyway, thanks for the call. Thanks, Hannah. Any other questions? Hank, WFTL in Florida, West Palm Beach. Hank, question or comment for Aaron?
Yes, Mr. Klein. I was wondering what we can do as just typical Americans or Israelis to combat this. It seems like our governments are non-responsive. They're blowing things up around here periodically, as well as shooting our civilians at schools, at churches. And our government's doing absolutely nothing, and I cannot handle it. I'm 23 years old, and I'm seeing this happen. It seems like our elder society, which should be protecting us, should be. They aren't.
And I'll tell you, the government's not doing nothing. They're doing the opposite of nothing. They're actively losing the war on terrorism. And one thing that's very important for all Americans to understand is where your money is going. I don't think most Americans realize that Fatah, that Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas's Fatah organization, which I guarantee you had their grimy hands in today's attack, they're actually funded and trained by the United States. We're giving hundreds of millions to them. We're giving money to Saudi Arabia, to Egypt, where the Muslim Brotherhood increasingly gains a role. So as an American, you need to hold your government accountable for what they're doing with your money, because you, the listener, you're sponsoring terrorism.
I know, but Aaron, you don't understand. We can't hold our government responsible for anything. We have no relationship with our government. We have no relationship with our government. We have no way to reach our government. They live in their own world, Aaron. We have a government media complex in America. You're an American. I know you. Aren't you an American, Aaron, who's living in Israel? Or? All right, so you know the system here. It's all a fraud. It's a sham. We have no participatory democracy in this country. In fact, after we pass a ballot initiative where we have partial democracy every once in a while, special interest groups will go behind the back of the people and go to activist judges to throw out the will of the people, as is going on in California, where we voted against homosexual marriage. And the radical homosexual mafia is now shopping it to the Supreme Court, saying, let the people drop dead. We, the homosexual mafia, don't want what the people said. We want you to do what we want. So where is the government? Tell me where the government is, Aaron.
No, I absolutely agree with you, and I think that as Americans, one thing that you can certainly do is try to stay informed, and that's why I thank God for something like the Savage Nation, and thank God for some of the independent media out there, the one or two that are actually doing their jobs, so that you can know what it is that the rest of the media doesn't want you to know, and that is that the shooter today in Jerusalem is the same as the insurgents attacking our troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's all the same war. It's really terrorism against Jerusalem is the same.
But Aaron, let's slow down. When I hear the attack, this attack didn't come spontaneously. These are the button men, as in an organized criminal gang. Somebody above them issued the command to do it, and somebody above them gave them the green light, all the way up to the head of the family. And one of the five terrorist families, as sure as I'm sitting here, is Iran. One of the heads of the terrorist families is the Iranian murderer. That's what I keep seeing here. He's the head of one of the five families of terrorists in the world. There's no secret here, but they own Congress!
Savage.
You're talking about 15, 16-year-old children lying on the floor dead with their Bibles in their hands, blood all over the floor, blood all over their Bibles, and the vermin in the Associated Press, the vermin, the children of Hitler and Reuters, say that people were killed, not children. Apparently Jews can't be children. They can only be people. 15, 16-year-old guys lying on the floor with their Bibles in their hands, all dead on the floor. Now, here's an example of what to expect from John McCain if he becomes president. Answer, nothing. Dentures, Martha Ray dentures in a glass. That's what you're going to get, bubbling dentures in a glass. I mean, this guy has a chance right here to step out, distinguish himself from Hillary and Obama, and say, he can call a press conference, couldn't he? Wherever he is, he was eating pancakes with a bunch of overweight slobs somewhere in the Midwest. He could call a press conference and say, I want to talk about this horrible slaughter, the killing of the innocents, when I'm president, blah, blah, blah. Immediately, he's right center. He's a shining knight, a knight in shining armor. But where is he? Where is he? What's he, cleaning the dentures? Cindy's doing a brush job on the dentures somewhere in a motel room? It's disgusting. Here's what we're going to get from John McCain if he wins now. Nothing. Another empty suit for 4 to 8 years. So that's why I'm not covering the thing. It's meaningless. It's rubbish. We have the same government that the Israelis do. The same thing. The same thing. It may as well be Olmert as much as the others. They're all the same. We're speaking with Aaron Klein, live from Jerusalem. Aaron, welcome back.
Thanks. You don't like that.
Aaron, why has there been no rebellion in Israel by people throwing Olmert out or demanding it? I mean, how can they take this? I don't understand it.
They have tried to rebel. I've gone to protests where literally 200,000 Israelis, which would have been the equivalent of 3 million Americans, gathered in the center of Tel Aviv, the center of Jerusalem, demanded that this guy go. They've marched from Jerusalem to Tel Aviv to near the Gaza.
So you have a dictatorship, in other words. You have a European Union, U.S. dictatorship, where Israel, the vassal state, has no authority and no fundamental integrity as a nation.
That's right. Basically, the way to get rid of a prime minister in Israel is to call what's called no-confidence motions. But if the Knesset deposes the prime minister, the entire Knesset is also deposed. In other words, they have to form a new Knesset if they get a new prime minister. So each individual Knesset member doesn't want to lose his job. So for their own reasons, they're obviously staking the security of the Jewish state and not calling for the deposition of all.
Gee, it sounds so much like our Congress in a peculiar manner. Although your system is the British parliamentary system, or built upon the British parliamentary system, where you can have a call for a new vote at any time, a vote of no confidence. And, of course, we're stuck with a CEO who could be running the country into the ground. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine electing the CEO of a company who's corrupt, incompetent, stupid, crazy, and you're stuck with him for 4 years? It wouldn't happen in the private sector. They'd throw him out. They'd throw him right out. But in America, we could be stuck with a dunce for 8 years, for example. But in Israel, you used to call – the people would call for a new government. There'd be a vote of no confidence, and there'd be a new government. But apparently now they've become a vassal state of the European Union. One more caller. Shalom, WOR New York, line 8. Go ahead, please. What's your question or comment?
For once, I beg to differ with you, Michael, and I believe that it's not the American press that's responsible for this tragedy, but it's actually the Israeli press, the ultra-liberal, self-hating Jews in the Israeli media who do everything they can to promote terrorists and ignore all the terrible tragedies that are happening to the Jewish people in Israel. Mr. Klein, if you go tonight to the to Ynet, the website of Israel's leading newspaper,
yeah,
you'll see that they're using the exact same term that Michael quoted earlier from the Associated Press. They're saying people were killed, 8 people. They're not saying children. They're not saying teenagers or students. They're using people.
All right, here's the BBC News again, the descendants of lunatics. 8 people have been killed and 9 wounded by a Palestinian gunman, not Palestinian murderer. Not Palestinian killer, not Palestinian terrorist, but 8 people have been killed, not children.
Yeah, we have the same liberal elite here in Israel that you have in the United States. It's the same enemy, and it's really the same type of media that controls the Israeli press that you have in the United States. And unfortunately, at least in America, you have talk radio. In Israel, we don't even have that. There is no single independent media.
You don't have talk radio in a nation of talkers? How's that possible?
Yeah, believe it or not, none. You have talk radio, but it's not independent talk radio. It's owned and operated by the army and owned and operated by the Israeli government. There's no...
In other words, like we're going to have in America, if God forbid, a Barack Obama or Hillary Clinton wins, we'll have a government-owned radio. Aaron Klein, any last words today on the Savage Nation?
Just that Americans need to remember, as I said before, that the war against us here in Israel, it's the same war being waged against you in New York. It's the same thing. And until
Aaron, hold on. You see, many people don't believe that. They say, you know, it's the Jews trying to drag us into a war by saying what's going on there is our problem. Many people say that's not true. Or even worse, they say if it wasn't for Israel, we wouldn't have terrorism. I want to correct that notion right now with you, Aaron. I know that the jihadists have been at war with the West since the 7th century. I also know that there are 7 major conflicts on the planet, and they're all consisting of Muslims who can't get along with their neighbor, whether it be a bomb set off in trains in Bombay, which they don't call Bombay anymore. What in the world does that have to do with Israel, Aaron? You know, and I know nothing.
Yeah, indeed. And actually,
what about the Moro guerrillas of the Philippines, Muslims again, attacking Filipinos? Does that have anything to do with Israel?
Nope.
Okay, well, let's go down the list, Aaron. Can you name the others?
I mean, we can go through the insurgents in Iraq and in Afghanistan, the Muslim Brotherhood in Egypt, the rising Muslim Brotherhood in Jordan. It's all the same thing, but I'll tell you.
Well, let's go to Nigeria. Then let's go to the tragedy in Darfur, where all the actors and actresses, in the midst of their nymphomania and their drug addiction, suddenly come up for air and say, "Well, what's the cause du jour? Oh, it's Darfur." And they don't mention what that's about, Aaron. What is the slaughter in Darfur? Is it not a black Christians or black nativists being killed by Arab Muslims who want to convert them to Islam in Darfur?
That's the same slaughter everywhere in the world. And I talk to these guys, so I can tell you it's not about land. It's not about territory. It's not about America getting out of Iraq or Afghanistan. It's not about destroying Israel. I talk to them, and they boast that they have one goal and one goal only, and that is to spread their Islamic belief system around the world.
All right, well, this cancer has to be stopped. George Bush is on the right track. Last question again. Which of the three candidates, in your opinion, is a most likely to see it as it is and to continue the good fight against the radical Islamists? And which candidate is most likely to capitulate to them? Aaron Klein, go ahead, please.
Well, I'll tell you, I'm really afraid of Barack Obama. I don't think any of them are good. And actually, Hillary Clinton, by the way, just released a statement about the attacks in Jerusalem. She's the only one who has.
Wait, hold on. I haven't seen that. What has the woman in the pantsuit said?
She said that my thoughts and prayers are with the victims.
Oh, please. I don't want to hear any more of this Hallmark card from Hillary. A Hallmark card. My thoughts and my prayers. Get out the balloons and the stuffed toys and the candy and put it next to the bloody Bible. That's next. I want to see Israel rising up. I want to see 5 million people storming across the border into Gaza. Instead of waiting for them to swarm into Israel, why don't the Israelis swarm into Gaza? What happened to this country? What happened to them? When did Israel die, Aaron?
I think that it died after 1967, and the 1967 Six-Day War, and Israel finally retook the territories that it had biblically, and then you just had Jews here who lost it. And,
I think it died when a certain psychopathic rabbi from Berkeley, California, went over to Israel in the 1970s with a message called Peace Now. This very same man who was on psychiatric medication has now targeted Michael Savage. I won't mention his name on the show for obvious reasons. This psychopath, one man, has destroyed the Israeli state. He brought Peace Now to Israel, and you know what you have? You have pieces now, not peace now, pieces of human flesh and blood and Bibles on the floors of your seminaries, Aaron. That's what you have. You have pieces now, not peace now. Peace be with you. Shalom Aleichem. God bless you. God bless you. God bless you. This is the Savage Nation. 8 killed at Jerusalem school. 8 people have been killed. And 9 wounded by a Palestinian gunman who infiltrated a Jewish seminary in West Jerusalem, says the vermin at BBC, the cousins of Reuters, the cousins of the Associated Pukes. 15 and 16-year-old boys in pieces on the floor with their Bibles in their hands, all dead on the floor. Something that I do not think you will see on tomorrow's front page, New York Times, because in the New York Times, there's no room for anything except Barack Obama, the victorious, or Hillary Clinton, the victorious. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Talking about the Jerusalem Seminary Massacre, which occurred a few hours ago in Jerusalem. We are taking your calls. The phone number here at the Savage Nation is 1-800-449-8255. We go to callers around the country. You're welcome to call the show. Right now we turn to Keith on WOR. Keith, go ahead, please.
Hello, Michael. Good to speak to you. I'm a longtime fan, and it's an honor to speak to you. I'd like to ask you a few questions. Number one, I firstly detest what took place tonight. It's a disgusting story, and I detest terrorism. But number one, do you think Noam Chomsky is saying to you tonight, I told you so?
Lee, I don't know who that person is, nor am I interested in some unknown academic. What is your question?
Where was your outrage the summer before last when Israel flattened Lebanon and killed hundreds of children needlessly?
Okay, that's a very fair question. I'm going to give you a fair answer. Are you ready for a fair answer because you're asking a fair question?
Yes, sir.
Israel tries to minimize civilian casualties. Israel drops leaflets while the other side specifically targets women and children. You know that and I know that. Now, if you can't comprehend the difference between one nation that tries to avoid civilian casualties and the other side, which targets civilians in particular, then we cannot have a conversation because you're living in the world of moral relativism, which is what your academic pot smoker apparently has put into your head. Thanks for the call. There it is, moral relativism. We see the same thing here in America with the police and the gangs. We see the same thing here in America with the legitimate immigrant and the illegal alien. We see the same thing wherever we turn because of the vermin in the media and the vermin in academia. Jerusalem, calling the Savage Nation. David from Jerusalem, go ahead, please. What's on your mind?
Michael, I'm a big fan. I listen to your show a lot when I get a chance to. Want to make 2 points. First of all, this, I think, is a foretelling of what's going to happen if America votes in Hussein Obama or Hillary Clinton, who would kiss Arafat's wife.
Well, David, I know all of that, but I don't blame them for the fact that Israel cannot or will not defend itself. You can't blame the rest of the world for the fact that your leadership is non-existent. I mean, there was a time when you had Moshe Dayan or the woman, for example, from Minneapolis who had a pair of brass something or others in her skirt that the men like Olmert don't have, that the Israelis never would have permitted this. And had it happened, they would have given back a hammer over an anvil. But those days are gone, so you can't blame America for the fact that Israel won't defend itself.
My second point is this. I agree with you there. The message is not that Israeli students should get guns and defend themselves, because the fact is that this yeshiva, as opposed to what you were mentioning earlier, this yeshiva, the Hester yeshiva, all these boys were doing were in the army simultaneously as they were in yeshiva. This was a more
modern. Hold on. So which religious Jews do not serve in the army? Because there are some who refuse to serve in the army. Who are they? What sect are they?
They are a lot of Americans who come over, and they do not go to the army, or the very religious Hasidic Jews who do not serve in the army.
The religious Hasidic Jews who want the whole world to take care of them, you mean, because they're so holy?
Well, again, you can't have everyone in the army. That's like saying every American should go now.
Well, wait a minute. Why can't you have everyone in the army in a small state like Israel? Why not? It's a siege. It's a nation under siege. Why shouldn't they serve in the military? They can do non-military things in the army, couldn't they? They can clean latrines, serve food. They can teach religious services to the other boys. What do you mean they can't serve in the army? They're too good? They're too good for it? I'm sorry, Israel ought to straighten that one out real fast. They're not good. They can't serve in the military. Then what are they doing in Israel?
The terrorist was killed by one of the students, shot in the head 2 times. I think that's not the message. The real message is that America, every professor, every high school teacher should be offered a bonus if they go take gun training lessons, because just like what happened in Israel today, after a couple of minutes, they were killed. You know, unfortunately.
Oh, you have me on the same page as you. I totally agree with you. I believe every teacher in America who wants to be should be licensed to carry a firearm to defend the children. I wouldn't go so far as to say we should arm the children, because most of them are on drugs. A good percentage of them are on drugs. I've talked about that enough times not to turn this into a gun story. I don't want to go into the gun story. All right. We haven't heard from Barack Hussein Obama on the massacre in Jerusalem. We haven't heard from the Tin Man, McCain. But wisely, Hillary stepped out and said something, albeit she sent a Hallmark card, but she said something anyway. Is it time for a break, or we're out of the break here? I don't even remember anymore. I'm in a blur right now. Guys, we can keep talking. Okay, I'll take some callers on the Savage Nation. 1-800-449-8255. Earlier, I asked you, who do you blame for the Jerusalem slaughter? Who do you blame? Is it Condoleezza Rice? Is it Ehud Olmert? Is it George Bush? Is it who is it? Who do you blame? Is it the Israelis themselves? Do you blame God? Who do you blame? I mean, I'm asking you. Certainly you're thinking about somebody is to blame here. Who is it? We know the American left, what they consist of. They won't be happy until this country doesn't exist, the same way that the left in Israel won't be happy till Israel doesn't exist. That's why you have to spit in the face of leftists and not take them seriously. You have to say, drop dead, get away from me, because I'm liable to lose my temper. Go away, rat. Go away, rat. Go, rat. Run. Run, rat. Go away. Go away, you suicidal vermin. Go away from me. I can't stomach you, you little rat. You hate this country. Go away, rat. Rat, go away. Play the sound of the Palestinian practitioners of the religion of peace. Go ahead. It was celebrating the slaughter. There you go. There are the practitioners of the religion of peace studying their holy book for their inspiration, celebrating the murder of the innocents. Go ahead, go give them foot baths in Minneapolis. Go ahead. Go cater to them a little bit more. You'll hear the same horns and gunfire in your city in 2 or 3 years from now. Go ahead. Go elect Barack Hussein Obama, who wants to dance with the devil. Yeah, there's the sounds of the religion of peace in Gaza. They're all religious people. They're doing it for God. You hear this, the happiness? It's a New Year's Eve for them. They got on the party hats right now. Listen carefully. You heard this in New Jersey after 9/11. What they got for it were foot baths, not condemnation. They didn't get deported. They got more foot baths in Newark. And go ahead, listen. There it is. Listen carefully. There's the sound of the religion of peace coming out of Gaza right now. Go ahead, listen to it. It's a little painful, isn't it? I believe that was Allah Akbar. I believe that was God is great. Somehow this seems to be a religious celebration. WOR New York, Janet, go ahead, please. What's on your mind today?
Hi, you asked some great questions, but, you know, if you're going to blame anybody, you have to blame the Arabs and the Muslims and the communities and the nations, all who are condemning Israel. And, I mean, yes, you can. Anybody can blame anybody they want, you know, Condoleezza Rice, George Bush. But like you do so well, you know, Michael, you know, you tell it like it is. And you say all the time you raise the fact that the Muslims themselves, they are the ones to blame for this. Now, after they pulled out of Gaza, I agree completely.
Right, we know the whole story. Okay, you're blaming the entire Arab race, which I don't do, because I know some Arabs who are not terrorists. In fact, I know Christian Arabs. I know Arab Muslims who are not terrorists. And I'm going to say that like it is. In fact, increasingly, I'm having on my show Muslims who are totally opposed to jihad. In fact, I have as many as I can get on the show because they're starting to stand up and be counted. They are disgusted by the behavior of these vermin, these subhumans, of the type you just heard celebrating the slaughter in Jerusalem. So let's not broadcastedly do this.
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Welcome to the Savage Nation, where the world is taking turns that you never would have imagined as near as a few years ago. And tragically today, a Jew is safer in Germany than in Israel. Safer in Germany than in Israel, supposedly the land that they were supposed to have had for freedom. Today, a Jew is safer in Germany than in Israel. Now, why care if Israel is betrayed? Because if Israel is betrayed, as it is being, and America, therefore, is not too far behind. That's my opinion. And they're being betrayed, both Israel and America. In fact, all of the West is being betrayed by many forces and many influences. I don't have to enumerate them over and over again on a daily basis, do I? We're talking right now about the slaughter of children in a Jewish religious school hours ago as they were eating dinner, a late dinner, and studying in a library by Palestinian murderers who came in with a Kalashnikov and slaughtered these children who had no weapons. And you'll notice there's no outrage in the media, no emotions. It's all about Obama and how much money he raised and this and that, and how many sizes Hillary had to let her pantsuit out over the last 3 months from all of the rubber chicken dinners. I want to read you an article, though, that I've linked up from a newspaper, the Jerusalem Post. It's up on michaelsavage.com. I think it's the best article, and I haven't seen anything like this. So I'm going to actually read from it. It's by a gentleman named Kalev Ben David, an assault on the heart of Zionism, he says. Rarely have terrorists chosen their target with so much malicious care as in Thursday night's attack on Jerusalem's Merkav Harav Yeshiva. If the goal was to outrage the general public and to inflame that particular segment of it, most skeptical of the possibility of Israel one day coming to terms with its most immediate Arab neighbors, then the bullet struck home with deadly and accurate force, he writes. This will be a sharp blow for those Israelis, especially Jerusalemites, who have allowed themselves to let their psychological guard down since the Second Intifada petered out. That the gunman was able to carry out this operation in the heart of a crowded Jerusalem neighborhood, some distance away from the Arab neighborhoods of the capital, will raise serious questions about assumptions made since the construction of the West Bank security barrier. The Olmert government, which until now has been able to contain political fallout from the rocket fire on Sderot and Ashkelon, in part because of the absence of major attacks elsewhere in the country, will now find its margin of error and survival dramatically narrow. This is very important because this undermines Condoleezza Rice-Aroni's plan. I'll go on. The grief and fury, in particular of the religious Zionist sector, will be beyond measure at this violent desecration of the cradle of their movement. The current efforts by the government to reach an accommodation with the settler leadership on the removal of outposts will have been in vain for the time being, as any spirit of compromise will be buried with the victims of this atrocity. Israel's radical Islamic enemies, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, or Hezbollah, I should also add MSNBC, ABC, and CBS, have talked in the past month about dealing a blow to Israel that would go beyond any of those they have carried out before. The death toll last night was nowhere near the worst of those attacks they have carried out in the past. But in bringing their war of terror right into the halls of this yeshiva, the institution founded by and embodied with the spirit of the Zionist movement's most revered religious figure, the yeshiva's first Ashkenazi chief rabbi, Avraham Yitzhak HaKohen Kuk, the terrorists struck with the most terribly precise accuracy they have demonstrated to date. This is a subtlety that will be lost on 99.9% of the people listening to the show. In a few minutes, I have an astounding and prescient interview that I did earlier with a Muslim professor, Abdullah Anaim. Abdullah Anaim, you must listen to every word that this Muslim professor says on the Savage Nation today. Why am I saying that? Because this wonderful, brave, heroic Muslim professor, Abdullah Anaim, is arguing for secular Islam and arguing against the imposition of Sharia law, unlike some groups in America, particularly of the type that I am fighting in court tomorrow right here in San Francisco, who, in my opinion, is a front group for the Muslim Brotherhood. So there it is, ladies and gentlemen, the war goes on. The war goes on. It's a shooting war. It's a talking war. It's a visual war. It's a bloody war. Right now on MichaelSavage.com, the headlines are, Muslim fanatics slaughter Jewish religious students in Jerusalem. Olmert enabled this, as did all other peaceniks. It's kill or be killed. On the right side, my headline, Palestinian killers slaughter high school students, world yawns. But the article I just read to you from the Jerusalem Post is the third one on the right, an assault on the heart of Zionism. Underneath it is the question, where did Obama get the $55 million from? How could an unknown junior senator raise so much money so fast? $55 million in the month of February? Aren't you curious as to where the money is coming from? I'll be back. Savage. Well, we all know about the extremist Muslims who are bloodthirsty, throwback, murderous killers. They want to impose so-called Sharia law on every last woman and child in the world. But here and there is a glimmer of hope. Professor Abdullah Anaim is a moderate Muslim, a reformer, who argues that Sharia cannot be the law of any land. And he's written a book called Islam and the Secular State. Professor Anaim, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be on the show.
We hear the term Sharia law thrown about all the time, but what in fact does this mean?
It is not actually law at all in the sense we know the term now. It is the totality of the Muslim juridical jurisprudential tradition. So it is the totality of the obligations of a Muslim covering all range of subjects from confession of the faith to matters of doctrine to ritual practices to ethics, even etiquette. So it has very little legal content in the modern sense of the term, but it's a very powerful idea for Muslims to think about their obligations as Muslims from a religious point of view.
Politically, how does this Sharia fit into today's world?
The object of my book is actually to confirm what I believe most Muslims think about but don't articulate, which is Sharia may be a very powerful political idea in terms of how society's politics are influenced by their religious beliefs, by their ethical, cultural standards and understandings. But it has nothing to do with the state. And my objective in the book is to make a clear distinction between politics and the state. And I see people often use the term Islam and the state, Islam and politics interchangeably. And my point is that, yes, Islam and politics are connected as every religion is connected to the politics of the believers, but Islam and the state must be separated and cannot be confused with each other. So the notion also of Sharia being enforced by the state as a state law, I call it a total incoherence. It is a contradiction, because any principle of Sharia, when it is enacted by the state into law, it is no longer Sharia. It becomes the political will of the state. So my point is that whatever the state does is secular, whether we acknowledge that or not. But not acknowledging it leads to a confusion, because then political opposition becomes heresy. And what we see in Iran today with the elections coming up next week and the Council of Guardians actually prescribing who can run and not run for election, that shows the level of confusion. Because how can a body of people however learned they may be, decide for the whole country who is competent even to run for elections, for people to decide whether or not to elect them. So I think my point is that confusing Islam and the state creates a totalitarian regime, except that it is even harsher than every totalitarianism, whether Marxist or Nazi, in that this one is in the name of religion, which makes it even harder to resist.
Well, one of the points I picked up from your book was, as in most religions, the importance of personal responsibility exists.
Actually, you are absolutely right that all religions, my point is precisely that the only way I can be a Muslim is by conviction and personal responsibility for my choices and my action. And when the state claims to enforce that, then it denies me the possibility of being Muslim on my own responsibility and terms. And for that reason, I think it is important to emphasize individual responsibility and accountability, which means the state must be kept out of religion. I need to protect religion from the state as much as protecting the state from religion, which to me is a genius of the First Amendment of the American Constitution, is that it strikes that balance by protecting the state from religion and religion from the state. But it is up to people to keep that balance alive and well. And when people do not realize the political impact of religion, they may tend to assume that institutional separation between religion and the state is enough, which I think the weakness of the American system is that in the American public imagination, there is an assumption that we have done this, it is over, and it is not over. And we have to keep reenacting the discourse of a secular state every generation. Otherwise, we will lapse into religion coming into the state through the back door of politics.
Well, what about women? How do they fit in?
I think women is a central problem for developing societies, as for all societies. I think we have to, one point I would say is to keep things in perspective and realize that this is a cultural problem more than a religious problem. That a religious discourse is used to legitimize a cultural bias against women, and also an economic and political bias against women. So men seek to legitimize the domination of women through a religious discourse. A counter-religious discourse is possible, but for that to happen, we need to keep the state secular, because the coercive power of the state is a horrendous resource for oppression, and when liberal voices are silenced by state authority in the name of religion, then the possibility of liberation of women becomes extremely difficult. Part of the problem is in Muslim societies around the world, we see something in the nature of a post-colonial underdevelopment which keeps women marginalized and oppressed. And the fact that it is covered up in a religious discourse should not distract us from the real socio-economic and gender and political nature of the issues.
Where do you see Sharia going from here? What do you think is the future?
Out of the state. One point. That is, we should never have any, we should not concede. You see, I think part of the problem is we concede the claims of the fundamentalists too easily. My purpose is to challenge the core claim. The state can never be Islamic. The state is always a non-religious institution. It may not be secular enough, but it is never religious. Second point is that we acknowledge and regulate the relationship between religion and politics. So Sharia, as the normative system of Islam, which Muslims believe to be religiously binding, is extremely influential at the ethical, moral, cultural level, but should never be expected to be state law as such. So I say that, I call it the subtitle of the book is Negotiating the Future of Sharia. And my claim is that the role of Sharia has always been negotiated among the competing political actors, religious leaders, socioeconomic forces in every society. And in the more recent past, with the rise of fundamentalism in the Muslim world since the middle of the 20th century, we have for the first time this claim that the state can be Islamic and Sharia can be enforced by the state. I call this a post-colonial discourse. It is not an Islamic discourse in the traditional sense. So my point is to say we keep Sharia out of the state, but also we contest what Sharia means in society. And my whole point is when the state is neutral regarding religious doctrine, social and political actors like myself can struggle for the rights of women, for freedom of religion, for political participation. All of this, we can struggle for it in the public domain when the state is neutral regarding religious identity and religious doctrine. So the future of Sharia for me is a subject of negotiation, of contestation among Muslims and among non-Muslims, because part of my argument is that non-Muslim citizens have an equal right to engage in this debate because it affects them and their life. It is not an exclusively Muslim discourse. So it is a negotiation, a contestation in the public civil society domain outside state institutions.
Well, that just shows we agree more than we disagree.
I agree. I think there is a lot of similarity. One point, I think there is a very dangerous Islamic exceptionalism that is ironically mounted by both extremist Muslims who claim Islam and Muslim to be exceptional to human experience, or some of their non-Muslim opponents who also try to demonize and sort of marginalize Islam and Muslims as something that is beyond the pale of human conversation and experience. My point is that Muslims are human beings who happen to be Muslim. So as some other human beings happen to be Christian or Jewish or Hindu or any other religion or no religion. And the point is that we should not lose focus on our fundamental humanity. So among Muslims, all that pertains to human struggles for justice, for peace, for stability, for economic development is shared by Muslims as it is by non-Muslims equally. And the fact that the discourse is using different symbols, whether Christian or Islamic or other symbols, does not change the nature of the basic challenges facing all societies, all human societies.
Savage.
In a recent article on webcommentary.com, Andrew Durham wrote a piece on me, Michael Savage, in which he caught aspects of the Savage Nation that most commentators choose to miss. He's here to talk about it today. Andrew, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thanks for having me on, Michael. It really is an honor and a privilege for me.
In the article, you quoted me saying liberalism is a mental disorder. Give us some details on that.
I had been thinking about it for a while, and I noticed in my research the book that was mentioned on WorldNet Daily. And I thought to myself, well, this is exactly what you were saying, that, you know, liberalism is a mental disorder, and this is more of the scientific aspect of it, actually bearing that out, if you call psychology science. And it was a little bit more, I would say, of a vindication of that idea. I sort of had a smile on my face, and I was walking home, and I said to myself, you know, I need to write about this because, you know, who else is going to bring it up? And so I did.
And what made you think you want to go in that direction with this article?
Because I've been listening to you for years, and I've read your book, and I really wasn't, to be honest with you, concerned about the clinical aspects of it being true, but I just thought it was, I guess for lack of a better word, ironic that this would come out. I just needed to mention it because I've been, like I said, I read the book, and I've been listening to you talk about it for so long, and I just wanted as many people to know about it as possible, that this is coming out from another unrelated source confirming what you were talking about.
Well, what do you think makes me so different?
Well, the truth of the matter is you're human, You're not representing anything. You're not, as you put it, a shill for any of the two parties, if you believe that there are two parties anymore. You're truly independent, and you say what's on your mind, and I think that most people in this country are longing for that. For instance, you know, most everybody that listens will say, are the kind of person that will say, that will go away from a situation saying, oh, I wish I said that. You're not that kind of person, and I think that really feeds something in people. Of somebody who never says, I wish I'd have said that. They go ahead and do it anyway. And they take whatever happens after it and then stand up for themselves afterwards, genuinely not caring, not in a negative way, but not having being strong enough not to care what other people think.
But those very views have some people labeling me by names that I am not.
Well, that's just absolutely not true if you listen to everything that you say. I mean, you have to listen to the entire logic of it all. People come at it from their issues point of view. They don't come at it from listening to it as a potentially objective observer. I mean, you're certainly not racist. Like any sane person, you dislike the negative stereotypes that people consciously live out. And I just think that we need to be aware of that and that it's going to get more difficult in years to come, especially if Obama or Hillary gets into office. And we need to be really concerned about the loss of the First Amendment. And I've said it before, and I'll say it again, political correctness is the AIDS of the Constitution, and we need to be on top of that, or else we're going to be in a lot of trouble, and as we all know, the First Amendment is unequivocal. There's no kind of sort of oughta. It is unabridged free speech. We need to be on top of that and make sure that does not die.
Well, just like my lawsuit with CARE, which I was forced into by CARE.
Yes, I'm very familiar with the lawsuit. I wrote an article about that some time ago. And I'm really anxious to see how that turns out, because this is going to be huge. And again, nobody else is talking about it, and it needs to be. I know I will be, and I really want to know how this turns out, and I'm in total support of it. And I have gotten hundreds, literally of hundreds of emails from the last article I wrote and this one in total support of your position.
Why do you think the so-called mainstream media, which I call the midstream media, just wants me to disappear?
Because you're not one of the good old boys club. And that's just elementary school thinking. And it's because you're not one of them. You're not rubbing somebody's back. You're not, you know, one hand washes the other. You're independent on your own. You are not beholden to anybody. And I think there's a certain amount of envy in that, because the audiences, your audience, and I'm positive the audiences of others are completely different. And I'd be thankful for that, to be honest with you, because it's an enviable position. You can't be bought or sold. Everybody knows that. And they know that they can be. And that's plain to see. Because I can predict, if listening to other talk show hosts, I can predict what they're going to say on a daily basis. You, nobody can predict. And that's what's great, because that's the way human beings are. And that's the way we all should be. We all should be able to say what's on our mind without regard to consequences, to a point, of course. But on the other hand, it's a different thing altogether to have people on the radio who are just representing a political party, and you know exactly what they're going to say. It's a 2+2 equation. You're not.
Why don't we see more hosts like myself, hosts who are willing to be straight up honest?
There's two ways of going at that, because not a lot of people have guts, and that's the polite word for it. And, you know, the other thing is who would want to? I mean, you know, you got the market cornered. You got the market cornered on being straight with your speech, talking, saying what's on your mind. And, you know as well as I do that it's resonating with the public. It resonated with me, and it turned me totally around from when the first time I heard your show. And I've heard that a lot in a lot of emails I've gotten, that when people actually sit and hear over a period of time, they go, yeah, you know, yeah. It takes people being discriminating listeners, you know, to listen to the way that you take things apart, because it's very easy to come in like in the middle of a show on one night and then just hear one thing but not know what the logic follow-through was it or the angle of which you're going at it. You know, there's a lot of people in the media that are trying not to step on anybody's toes. And, you know, we all know what that leads to. It leads to silence. It leads to silencing. And it's going to lead to, you know, everyone being shut up. And I'm very concerned about that. To be honest with you, I wouldn't hope for too many more people taking on that mantle. like I said before, you've got the market cornered. But I appreciate, and it's an honor and a privilege, you know, to be on the show. Now, like I said, I've been listening literally nightly for 6 years, and I listen, try to make the time all every day, and I hope you don't give it up. I really do. I don't think you will. And you just need to know, at least from this writer's point of view and from the responses I've gotten, you have an enormous amount of support out here, and you can always count on that. I don't think others can. I know you can.
Andrew Durham, Sharp Observation, thanks again for being with me on the Savage Nation.
Thanks again for having me on, and I look forward to hearing you every night from now on.
Savage.
Back to the Savage Nation. I mean, we had two great interviews this hour. The Muslim scholar, he taught me something when he said, not only must we protect the state from religion, we must protect religion from the state. And his other main point was, is that, yes, I believe in Sharia law, but that's for the individual to assume and to practice, not for the state to impose it. And he said, once the state imposes it on people, it's no longer a religious law. It's a state-imposed law. It loses its religious connotation. And, of course, his interpretation of Sharia law is much different than that of the bomb throwers and the maniacs and the throat cutters. A huge lesson in that one. Huge, huge lesson. And the other one with Mr. Durham on his view of me, I thought was very good. Speaking of which, tomorrow, speaking of terrorism, speaking of freedom of speech, speaking of the enemies of the First Amendment, tomorrow is our day in court. 25,000 of you have sent money to the Michael Savage Defense Fund, legal fund. Tomorrow, my attorney, Dan Horowitz, goes before the judge in San Francisco, and he will face the attorney for CAIR, and we'll find out what the judge says, step one. It's been a lot of work for the attorney. Believe me, he spent a lot of hours on this. Nothing's easy in the courts today. And the battle over free speech continues. In fact, it starts tomorrow. It doesn't continue. Tomorrow is round one. I don't know where it's going to end up. I hope it ends up in our favor. Never know. It's the courts. Ocala, Florida. John, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hello, Dr. Michael Savage. It's a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you.
To your program every night. It's very educational.
Thank you, sir. And what's on your mind tonight, John?
I think between the three candidates, I'd go with McCain, and that you wouldn't run for president because I think you'd probably be better than all of them.
Well, that's very kind of you, but I absolutely am not a politician. I don't have the inclination nor the nature to be such. Thank you for the call. However, in a way, we're all politicians, aren't we? Houston, Texas. Grant, KPRC, thanks for holding. You're up on the Savage Nation.
No, Dr. Savage, thank you. I'll get into my quick rant for you, if you will.
Yes.
In my short 27 years on this earth, sir, I've been told to keep my religious views to myself as not to incite and or provoke, keep my political opinion to myself as not to incite and or provoke. And what has it got me when I look up and I see it? It's gotten me a broken border system, a very highly corrupt government, and a holy war. And I do say, yes, a holy war, whether our government wants to recognize it or not. Dr. Savage, every time a bomb goes off, I cry inside a little bit, and I buy a bullet. Every time a child is shot, I cry inside, and I buy a bullet. Sir?
I know where you're coming from. I bought my first I bought an AR-15 in 1980. I bought a Ruger Mini 14 in 1981, when certain events went on in the world, I hardened each time as well.
Dr. Savage, I, like many Americans, I know that they feel the same way that I do, and we just sit back on our chains and wait to be unleashed. But, Dr. Savage, I will tell you this, and I will tell you this now, that you know how an animal works, and sometimes when it's provoked, it will break its chain. So in that, Dr. Savage, God bless you. God bless what you do, and for everybody out there, stand up for what is right. Thank you.
Well, there's one man, but he's not one man. He probably speaks for 30, 40 million Americans who are on short leashes about to break their chains because they can't take another day of this. They can't take it. They can't take it from the top to the bottom. The government knows that. They know what you're feeling. They're not stupid. They're men like you. And they also know that their deceit is not, that their defeat is transparent. Their deceit, rather, is transparent. That your defeat, our defeat, frankly, is transparent. We've been defeated. We are like a defeated nation. As much as the Israelis have been defeated by global forces and they can no longer defend themselves, you think we're far different from them. We've been overrun by an army from Mexico. Oh, I know those are words that are not allowed to be spoken anymore. What would you call the visitation? Would you call that a visit? They're on tourist visas? 30 million people here illegally? They're here on tourist visas? Most people would call that an invasion. We've been invaded, and we sit here waiting for the patsies to do something for us, and you know what they're going to do. They're going to grant amnesty to the illegal aliens. Ah, we know the whole story, and we know it up and down and inside and out, and how many amongst the illegal aliens are terrorists from the Middle East who have shaved their beards and taken on Hispanic names? You say it never happened. We know it's happening. We've gotten reports from Border Patrol agents, FBI, Homeland Security. They're silenced, they're hushed up, and they're rushed out of the job on the border the minute they tell America what's really going on. We know this. The question is, how much can we take from the midstream media? How much longer can we take the lies of the midstream media is the question. I see no outrage. There was a time when you saw a bus full of Jewish children killed, when there'd be, even in Israel itself, an excited, almost maniacally excited reporter in the streets of Israel. You don't even see that anymore. It's like they've gone to sleep. They've been hypnotized. God only knows, is it drugs? Is it sex? Is it rock and roll? What did it to them? Was it that one psychopathic rabbi with white on the sides of his mouth from Berkeley, California? The man who picked up a knife to his girlfriend? Is it that one rabbi who brought peace now, the lie of peace now to Israel that destroyed a nation? Can one man, in fact, infect a nation? Can one man infect an entire nation? Why not? He's a carrier. Typhoid Mary infected an awful lot of people. This typhoid rabbi infected an entire nation with a lie called peace now, that if you lie down with your enemy, you're going to get up in love. But you know, when you lie down with your enemy, you know, sometimes you don't get up at all. You never get up. And this same rabbi has formed a fake religious group and is trying to destroy my radio show. And I will report on him very soon. I'm using phrases right now, but very soon after CARE, we're going to go after them. We're going to go after him personally. He got his money by marrying a rich girl whose father left her money. And from her money, he built a magazine. And from that magazine, he became Hillary Clinton's pet rabbi. And then when she saw the foam on the side of his mouth, she distanced herself from him a long while ago. But he still continues to spread the lies and the hatred under the guise of being a holy man, a religious figure. Soon, the world will know who this man is. Soon, his private fortune will be up for grabs. 1-800-449-8255. Apathy is the operational word. The mainstream or midstream media has created an apathy amongst the people that is overwhelming in its effects. Here we have, for example, a slaughter, a travesty of children in a holy school. They were reading the Bible when they were killed. If a Quran so much as gets a drop of water on it, the FBI goes into overdrive looking for who perpetrated the hate crime. You see how it all works? When a bunch of vermin at the Brooklyn Museum a number of years ago put a crucifix in a jar of urine, everyone laughed at them, at the Catholics who complained. I didn't laugh at them. I stood with them. It's unfortunate that they didn't stand with me, but I stood with them. I know many of you are Catholic, and you have stood with me and stand with me. I'm talking about specific, organized religious figures. 1-800-449-8255 is the phone number. What can I do with you right now? Where did Obama get the $55 million from in the month of February? You think anybody in the media will ask that? I doubt it. Talk show hosts fall like flies in San Francisco, except Dr. Michael Savage, says the article. 1-800, I don't know. I have so many articles on my website. I don't know if I want to go down the list of them right now. Some of them are great. They have nothing to do with the topics we're talking about, but it's sad to look at them. Here's one. Remember Murtha? Remember that man Murtha, the alleged war hero in his own mind, who called our troops Nazis and killers, and in so doing won the favor of the Nancy Pelosi wing of the Democrat Party and is now the biggest recipient of pork barrel spending in the history of America, the same Jack Murtha, former Marine, who stabbed Marines in the back and now put them on trial at Haditha. Remember that, Murtha? Well, the attorneys for Colonel Chassani, who is still facing and fighting for his life in a court-martial, tried to call Murtha to court. Guess what happened? Take a guess what happened. The stench from the bench is making me clench. A fetid stinker in a black robe said, no, Murtha does not have to testify. Chassani's attorneys released the ruling just yesterday, and yet the lawyer said, no, Murtha does not have to testify. Remember what Murtha said. Listen to it right now in the Savage Nation. This is a former Marine who, after this, went right into the inner circle of the Pelosi wing of the Democrat Party and is now the biggest recipient of pork barrel spending in American history. Listen.
An IED exploded. It killed one Marine. And then a taxi drives up. When a taxi comes up, there's four or five people in it, and they shoot those four or five people unarmed. And then they go in a rampage throughout the houses and kill people. One woman, as I understand it, in talking to the officials in the Marine Corps, was bending over a child, pleading for mercy, and they shot her in cold blood.
That's a former Marine, and you vote for him in Pennsylvania? Now, four enlisted Marines were initially charged with murder in this case of Haditha. Four officers were charged with failing to investigate. But charges against several of the men have been dropped. None will face murder charges. Only one man is facing, in essence, the firing squad. And that's Colonel Chassani, a man who's given most of his life to protecting us in the United States of America. But you see how the country works? You get a corrupt, rotten congressman like this, a Judas. And because the judges and the government and the media are all one and the same in the same group, they control we the people, and we the people have no representative government anymore. Because by all means, if it's a trial and this man made these statements, and these statements that Murtha made came to him from a man from Time magazine who is well known to hate the military. He made the whole thing up, apparently. The Time magazine reporter took it from one of the enemy who hid behind children, as they do every day in Gaza. They hide behind children. That's how they operate, the Islamists. They hide behind their wives and children. Then they hold up the child and say, oh, you killed a child. So you figure Murtha should be forced to testify as to where he got that information. So be it. That's as the world turns. Slaughter in Jerusalem. The world yawns. Where did Obama get the $55 million from last month? Think about it.
Savage.